Okay, we'll go ahead and get back to it. Again, like I said, with this, this is a good illustration for you to understand what actually is going on there in a relationship, because a lot of times we grow up and nobody's really teaching us or explaining to us what's going on. We just find somebody we like. I mean, that way you did, that's where I did it. We found somebody we like, and we like them, and we keep liking them, and you know, you like them long enough to eventually it just proceeds to where I guess it's going to be okay, and we get married. We're not consciously saying, let me check them out. Let me look for this. Where am I at in our relationship? We just say, well, you know, we let other people tell us when we should get married. Well, y'all been dating a long time. When you going to get married? Well, I guess we probably should start thinking about that. You know, we don't have in our mind, like, I'm going to get married because I've analyzed myself and I know now I'm ready to get married. That's not what we're thinking. We're just like, well, you know, he seemed nice. She seemed nice. And you see how dangerous that is when you don't have any standard or any consistent meter by which you can know I'm ready to get married. Do I know this person? Do I know how many kids they want? Do I know their background? Do I know their friends? Not every last one of them, but the closest friends. Why would you marry somebody if you don't know their closest friends? Do they have any friends? Why don't they have no friends? You know, do they have too many friends? Do I have that sanguine life of the party personality they have? Or am I more reserved, no one to get in all that traffic? We'll get around to it. But the basic truth is you want to marry a clone of yourself. Opposites attract, but they have a very difficult time staying together. But they generally do attract. They generally do attract. Generally, somebody who's more quiet is going to attract somebody louder, and somebody louder is going to attract somebody more quiet. The reason is Helen and I are kind of like that. She's more of an introvert. I'm more of an extrovert. You know, we have middle personalities, but if you had to pick them and force them, she's a lot quieter than I am. Most of you know that. I'm a lot louder than she is. Most of you know that. I'm a lot more outgoing. She's a lot more introverted. One is not better than the other. There's benefits to all personalities, but there's also negative sides to all personalities. I'm caloric. She's more phlegmatic. You know, I'm caloric sanguine. She's phlegmatic melancholy. So we're kind of on opposite spectrums in a lot of areas. Now, why did we attract to her? Because all my life, the teachers would say, you're getting straight A's. Why can't you shut your mouth? Because, hey, there's semesters I had. I don't know if they use 1, 2, 3s here, but in Detroit, in citizenship, they have 1, 2, 3, and a 3 is bad. There's semesters I had straight A's and straight 3s next to them. And they say, boy, you're smart as a whip. Why you don't stop talking? I didn't care. But you're hearing that all your life, you assume there's probably some you'd probably rather not hear that. So you find somebody who's quiet, and you admire that in them. Oh, man, look at them. They're reserved. They're quiet. Oh, they're so sweet, so nice. But see, what makes that person like that and what makes me like this is not the same thing. So when we marry, we have natural conflicts in our personalities. We learned it real early when we got married. Hey, I'd come home with company. I would come home with a bunch of people behind me from work. And Helen would be like, what? You know, why are you bringing all these people over the house? Hey, you know, we all got to have a good time. We ain't going to bother you. We just going to watch the game. We're going to sit down. You ain't got to cook nothing extra. I brought some chips and everything. I brought a whole party with me. Let's go. What's the problem? And she's like, I just want to come home and rest. It was nothing wrong with me bringing people. It was nothing wrong with her wanting to rest. If I had a person who wanted to bring people, they said, good, you brought some company. Let's pull out the barbecue. Let's go for it. If she had somebody more like her, they'd say, oh, girl, let's just sit down and cuddle and watch a movie all night long. It's so good to be home. And there's nothing wrong with either one. There's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with her. But that's one area where we were different at. But opposites do attract because, oh, you know, he could just, he starts talking to me. Helen, I used to, when we first started dating, I'd be, she says, you know them? Not until 5 minutes ago. Because, you know, we'd be in the lines. Hey, how you doing? We just start talking. She said, you know them? Where you know them from? From that line 5 minutes ago. And she would admire me, my ability to just know people, just get in the middle and you just, because I'm relaxed. I'm not worried about what they think or how it looks. So, you know, just you're outgoing. That's not me. That's not Robert. That's an extroverted, sanguine personality. Everybody who's extroverted, sanguine can meet friends and just like they've known them for years. And most people are melancholy, are going to be a lot more reserved. They want to make sure everything's right. And it's just a weirdo. And then a lot of times they won't be as open to meeting people. That's nothing wrong with that person, because sanguines have their good and bad. Cholerics have their good and bad. Melancholy have their good and bad. And phlegmatics have their good and bad. Every personality type has a negative side, and all of them have a positive side. But the key is you need to find somebody like you. I'm telling you what's going to happen. You're going to look for an opposite. You're going to want an opposite. You're going to be drawn to an opposite. You're going to be attracted to opposite, but they're opposite. They're not like you. What makes you you is not what makes them them. And when the two of you come together, they're still going to be what makes them them. You're going to be what like you, and it's going to be grounds for contention. Now, understand how I say this. You're not going to find a perfect mate. You're not going to find, you should be looking for a clone of yourself, but understand this doesn't mean you break up just because you're different in one or two areas. Helen and I have a lot in common, similarities in background, and we're going to talk tomorrow about some things you must have in common, some things you need to look for the rest you have in common, some key points. Things like similar background financially, similar background maritally. Because if you want to stay married and everybody in their family is divorced, you better make sure they got reeducated or they're going to head towards divorce, because the answer in their family is when it get tough, that you get going. And in your family's like, you stick it out. And if you get to stick it out and get going, you'll be sticking it out by yourself because they got going. And do you know if they leave, you are divorced too? So if you don't want a divorce, you got to make sure you get somebody that's not their model. Because you can't control them. If they divorce you, they're gone. And I never expected a divorce. That was not my expectation. I was not expecting that your husband or wife would ever say, I'm going to leave you. Don't leave me? Where did that come from? You never heard that in your life. Your father never said, I'm going to leave your mother. Your mother never said, leave the father. But a person looks at you and says, I'm going to leave you. And you're like, where did this come from? You didn't check them out because they didn't get it from nowhere. They got it from, it was in them. And you better make sure it's out of them if you don't want to hear it from them. You're free. Stay free. Love, always be aware of what your relationship is growing towards. If you are developing a relationship with someone, you've got a person where you say, okay, basically, and I'll give you the checklist tomorrow, basically we've gone through this and we've gone through that and we're pretty good, you should start looking, where are we at? Where are we at? When I have bad days and I'm feeling sad and I say, you know, honey, I just don't want to go out today. Does he say, okay, I'll see you another day? Or does he say, what's wrong? You know, can I come by and, you know, just talk to you? We don't have to go out. We don't go out. Does he reach to comfort you when you're hurting? Or does he say, I ain't trying to have that. I'll go out with the boys. You tell me when you got together. Because when you marry him, don't be talking about, he's not sensitive, Pastor, to my emotional needs. He never was sensitive to your emotional needs. You're just crazy to expect he would be. He showed you that's not in him. That's not him. Part of that is just being a man, but there are men who are more sensitive than other men. And if you want a sensitive man, you better be able to identify one when you see him. And if you know you want a sensitive man, and there in is a problem. Most people don't know what they want. If I ask you right now, I say, I want everybody to write down 10 things that they must have in a mate, and I want you to write down 10 things you will not tolerate in a mate. Most of you could not fill out a list. If I say you got 4 minutes to do it, and when I looked at the list and it's so general, I'd be able to tell you just wrote this down for the first time in your life, didn't you? How long you been dating? Oh, since 16. What were you doing? What were you looking for? A good time. And some people say, I've been looking for a man for 20 years, and I say, what kind of man are you looking for? A nice man. What does nice mean? I love premarital counseling because people come in there and I don't let them use any of those. There's not one couple I've done premarital counseling with who can answer those questions right. Not one. Nor could I answer them right when we got married because I had a little bit of cheat. I'd gone to good church and pastor helped us out a bit, but couldn't answer them because you don't think about that. You know, I say, hey, so-and-so, what do you want in a man? Well, I want a man that's kind and admissible. We don't know what that means. Are you kind or? Yeah, I'm kind. Now, until you'll get married, he's promised to be kind. You said he'd be kind. And when you get married, they're thinking two different things about kind. And she comes and says, he ain't kind. He's saying, I am too kind. I'm very loving. But they got different definitions for the word. You need to define the terms, and you need to define one of the lessons in premarital counseling is I make you define every term and actions. I don't let you say I want a kind man. I want you to say I want a man that holds the door for me. If that's what you think makes kind, that's what I want you to say. That way he can look at it and say, I can do that. I want a man who can read my mind and knows what I want. I can't do that. Wrong one. can't read minds. I'm sorry, I don't qualify. Because you know a lot of girls, you're thinking he reads your mind. You got it from the Harlequin romances. Honey, you don't ever bring me flowers. Did you tell him to bring you flowers? I shouldn't have to if he loved me. So he was supposed to read your mind that today you wanted flowers, but he didn't know the day before you wanted flowers. You're expecting him to read your mind, and Harlequin romances taught you that. I tell you again and again, the only reason that man brought that girl, Harlequin romances, brought that girl flowers on a Lifetime TV show, because it was in the script. Most brothers ain't thinking about no flowers, especially once you get married. And it's not because he didn't want to do it, but people have a better idea of how to date than they do how to mate. Everybody knows dating. We've been taught real clear about Valentine's Day and everything else, what you do when you date. You bring a girl flowers, you bring that. Who taught you bring flowers to get married? What TV show does he bring a bunch of flowers? You mean, you all said you didn't like that Mrs. Cleaver. Ward used to bring her flowers, but Women's Lib taught you don't like Mrs. Cleaver. But that same show taught him Mrs. Cleaver likes flowers. Bring flowers. Now we look at our women as being strong, independent women. She don't want no flowers. I ain't bringing her none. But you find out you're still a gentle woman and you want flowers. But TV has taught a man, when did Raymond bring Deborah flowers when he wasn't in trouble? On the Raymond show. When did Bill bring Claire flowers when he wasn't in trouble? Name a show where he brought her flowers and he wasn't in trouble. You only bring me flowers when you want sex and when you're in trouble. That's right. That's when I learned to do it. Because after all, you threw all the shows out when the women told you that's a bad thing. If you stop and think about Miss Cleaver, Ward had her in the suburbs in a nice crib. She had steak at dinner. She wore dress clothes in the kitchen. She was dressed nice, didn't have to work. She just organized the house, kept the house organized, go to the ladies' social, go and have her knitting club or whatever. And Women's Lib taught women, you don't want to be like that. You don't want to be like that. You want to be a man. You want to earn your own money. You want to make sure that he ain't running over you. If you think back, Ward Cleaver didn't run over Mrs. Cleaver. But see, everybody thinks that's a negative role. And that is closer to a biblical role, because I do tell people, I was marrying one person, they said, don't put in them vows that me obey him. I said, I told you before, if you don't want to obey a man, stay single. Right. Stay by yourself. Pastor Cook, see, you got it all wrong. You're male chauvinist. Now, I said, I'm just telling you what the Bible says. Women be in submission to your husbands. Well, submission, that means like we both agree. Submission means beneath. In not any kind of you're worse than him before God, but in the authority over the household. If you got two people, I like what one minister said, anything more than one head is a freak. If you got a marriage with two people in the head and they disagree, what do? You can't move. God says all authorities of God in the Bible in Ephesians, we may get to it. I normally spend more time on a marriage seminar, but just to clue you guys in, and Helen's going to go into a little bit more with the ladies. It says that you be in submission one to another. Then they go on to explain the different types of submission. Just the man is the head of the woman, just as Christ is the head of the church. In the same manner, so like is he. The parents are the head of the children. Now, I heard just the other day from a lady, Mary Hunt, I think her name is. I was listening to some tapes, and I heard many men teach this. I've heard a few women teach it and say it, but you don't hear women say it often. And she began to talk about being in submission, and it began to bring out that just as Christ, the church is to submit to Christ, the wife is to submit to the husband. So if you plan on getting married, that's why I'm throwing this in. You're single, you need to understand this, because you might say, I ain't ready to do that right now. I don't want to do that right now. I got more things I want to do on my own. I want to go to the south of France. When I get married, I may not be able to go to south of France. Hey, go to the south of France when you get married then. You may think you want to be married, but you might have to give up the south of France when you get married if he don't want to go to south of France, because he's going to have some authority over what we do with the money. Pastor Cook, are you saying it's slavery? Long as you think submitting to a man's slavery, you better stay single. Because I'm telling you, you ain't going to be happy if you get a Christian man. You get a weak worldly man or a weak Christian man, he'll let you run the house. But I'm going to tell you what else, too, you won't respect him. Because you'll know you got a spineless man. And I was telling a couple just the other day, I said, what women would do, women that were trained in America, what they would do is they will ride you to be able to control you. And then if you let them control you, then they will disrespect you because you're not a man. And I don't know why it was within women to test men and to try men, but they'll try you. And the thing is, women really think that's what they want. They think they want to dominate the man. And sometimes they just wear a brother down and they dominate him and then they don't respect him. I wish I had a stronger man. I wish I had somebody like this strong man on TV or somebody like this strong image. But you know what? That strong man wouldn't let you get away with what you got away with all them years. He would have told you a long time ago, baby, I love you, but no. Oh, but I wouldn't. No. But I'm crying. You see the tears? So don't pet potters. Now, technically, if a man is right and he's making good decisions and he holds his ground, when other girls start telling her, you got a good man, you all got money in the bank. You got a good man, you live in a good neighborhood. You got a good man, he doesn't beat you. You got a good man, he's upwardly mobile. Then she'll come back and say, I do have a good man. But most women never let their man get there because instead of being a helpmeet, she becomes a hindrance because she comes with the Cinderella of I'm the princess and you're here for me. And men are taught, I heard one preacher say that you know how good a man is by the expression on his wife's face. And I've known crazy women. I've counseled some crazy women. That's no indicator to man to look on her face. Some folks gonna have what you're gonna have what the kind of look on your face you wanna have. You're gonna have a look on your face based on what you think, the kind of thoughts you entertain. Got nothing to do with your husband, got nothing to do with your wife. See a man look like he's beat down by his wife. It's not his wife's fault, he let himself get beat down. You ain't gonna blame his wife by the look on his face, and don't blame the husband by the look on her face. You're gonna have whatever kind of look on your face you decide to have. And what other people do doesn't make you have it. You interpret what they do and you choose to have that look on your face. Believe it or not, nobody else controls the musculature on your face but you. Nobody can make you smile. Oh, but he makes me smile. That's why I married him. No, he did something you just determined to smile about. I counsel people and you have marriage and I tell people, I say, God be like, look, you know, I bought her flowers once and she was happy. I bought her flowers the next time she's not happy, but she'll say, you don't bring me flowers. That's why I'm unhappy. Well, if they brought you flowers once and you are happy, brought you flowers the next time you're not happy, then the flowers obviously will make you happy is what you think about what's done. And that's what I try and teach women and men. You control you. You can be married to a nut and still be happily married if you think the right thoughts. And you don't expect too much out of a person. If you marry an unsaved man and you expect him to act like a saved man, you're going to stay unhappy all the days of your marriage. But if you find yourself married to an unsaved man and you lower your standard and he does something wrong or curses or drinks or something, you just say, well, you know, I love him. He's a heathen, but I love him. You lower your standard, you're not all that upset. Or if you got to stand, my man has to make a certain amount of money and you won't let that go. So I would not love him till he makes that amount of money. You're unhappy because of you, not him. And he might be very happy. You control your happiness. And I skipped over it, but I want you to know, I believe any two people on the earth can be married happily. And any two people on the earth, no matter who they are, saved or not saved, spirit or whatever, can be married unhappily. You can be both spiritually mature, get married, be happy, and one of you get away from God and get away from church and become carnal and be unhappy. You can marry the most carnal person in the world and then they decide to follow God and mature, or you decide to follow God and mature, and you can become happy. No matter what kind of trial they got you in, you can be in the joy in the midst of it if you have the right understanding of the Word of God. And you remember, the unhappiness is the difference between what you thought it would be and what it is. You can get happy again by lowering your expectation. I don't expect him to hold the door for me. But I still love him. But long as you're like, I really want him to hold the door. Well, he's never going to hold the door. But I really want him to hold the door. He's never going to hold the door. 30 years later, I really want him to hold the door. He's never going to hold the door. If you keep holding on to a stack of stuff like that, you're going to be unhappy, aren't you? Because you won't let go of an unrealistic expectation. If you married a guy who's never worn a tie in his life, and you get married and you want to dress him up and take him to tuxedo balls and the opera, you're not going to be happy because he's not going to do that. He doesn't even own a suit and a tie. What makes you think he want to go to the ball? Because you always dreamt when you played Barbie and Ken, the Ken would put on a Ken tuxedo and be dressed up Ken. But his name ain't Ken. And he don't play that. And you thought you were going to change a man. You know how many women think they're going to change a man? I don't think a woman has hardly ever changed a man except negatively. Now, there are women who can be a positive influence on a man, but remember, influence is not controlling change. But there are women who have been negative, and they have, the Bible has more women who negatively influence a man than positively. Jezebel and other people like that. And you have a great influence over your man, influence, not control, but you do have a great influence. And if you use that wisely, you can make it better for you and him. But if you use it to manipulate him, like, I'm the princess, I want what I want. If he doesn't do it, I'm a pout. You're trying to tell him, I'm going to be unhappy, and you're going to see me unhappy. I might even shed tears. Men don't like to see their women cry. I'm going to shed tears if you don't give me what I want. Or I'm going to pout. Or the big one, no sex for you. And they find that some men say, no, sex for me, just not with you. I tell women, I tell them what the Bible says, defraud you not one another, except for a season, and that if you both agree, but come back together quickly, lest Satan tempt you. Because men have a much greater, much more frequent, not greater, but a much more frequent need for physical contact than women do. That's why the guy's generally one in your pants, you're generally not in his pants. Because of the frequency. You need to understand that. You need to understand, single ladies, that men have, during their procreation years, they have a sexual cycle about every 48 to 72 hours. Now, you have your period once a month. He has his once every 2 days. And just like women know in common, all you guys in here have dated somebody, and you say, yeah, men are just dogs. They're not dogs. They have a more, because see, some people have said that during that time of month when you're not doing a period, but some women are hot before it, some women are hot after it, some of them are hot a couple of years, but you had a time of month where you really feeling a little empty and would like to be, like to have somebody with you. It's a hormonal thing. And you have that once a month primarily. So a guy would keep trying you, keep reaching your pants, keep trying you week after week, night after night, till he catches you that time when you want as much as him and you relax instead of staying stiff. And then you pop up pregnant after one or two times. He is constantly, every 48 to 72 hours, by God's design, wanting to procreate. That's why when you get married and you say, Pastor, he's like a dog. He's fighting, doesn't treat me nice, and he wants me to be with him at night. Why? Because his signal kicked in. Telling the man that, because it has nothing, what going on has nothing to do with a man when the signal kicks in. Or let's say, for example, you get angry. Do you still have your period? Let's say you get happy. Do you still have your period? Yeah, you're going to have it because it's hormonal. And a man would be not thinking about that. Maybe evening come along. Yesterday didn't want you. Day before didn't want you. You all just got a big drag out fight. And you mad at him. He's mad at you. And 5 minutes later, he's sliding up against you, trying to get close to you. Like, what is this? And you better get away from me. We fighting. And you just going to come up here and pretend like ain't nothing happened. But I want you, baby. Well, you all could be fighting and he could turn over and Aunt Flo could come visit. Because at that time of the month, she coming. Ain't got nothing to do with the fight you just had. And a lot of people don't understand that. So it's not that he's a dog. It's that his desire to have sex is much more frequent. I'm not going to say greater. Much more frequent than yours. So every man who's healthy, for the most part, with the exception of those we'll talk about who are eunuchs by choice, eunuchs by birth, everybody, for the most part, healthy man is going to want to touch, to feel, to grab, to squeeze. And the greatest thing you have to test a man's steel is, do you love me enough to hold yourself and to hold me pure until we get married? You got something if you got a man to do that. Helen and I hugged and kissed it and heavy petting and all that, but I was not going to be no daddy. I wasn't going to be a daddy. When I got married, I was a virgin. I wasn't going to be no daddy. I had enough sense, and I was raised in church, that partially just not wanting to be a father. My mother and them said, too, don't come home with no kids. Now, I really ain't that worried about that because men don't bring them home. She told my mother, don't bring no babies home. She told my sister, don't bring no babies home. Bring no babies home, and don't you go out there leaving none anywhere. When we had the little birds and the bees talk about all that, but I remembered that. My mom, dad talked to us about that. I remember that. And I knew how, I wasn't like wee wees and pee pees. I knew if you put that there and that there, somebody was going to have a baby. And I knew I had no money to provide for family. I could not take care of family. You ain't even wrote a checkbook. And it's pathetic when you go through the mall and you see a 16-year-old girl and a 16-year-old boy, and they're practically mating in front of you. You know what I mean? They all up on each other. And I'm like, he doesn't even have a checking account. He has never written a check, and they are way too close too soon, considering the amount of years it's going to take before he gets in a position where she should even consider marrying him because he has no ability to provide. They got another 6, 7, 8, 9 years of pressure, and they are already right at the brink of, I want you now. You kids shouldn't even be that close. You should be dating in groups. You shouldn't even let her, if you're not in dating age, you shouldn't even go out with the same person twice. You shouldn't, because if you go more than one time, it's implied that there's something there. We're starting to go steady. And if you years off from getting married, you can't handle the sexual pressure that long. We dated 5 years without having intercourse and had it on our wedding night. We dated 5 years, and that wasn't an easy thing. But we made it because we were Christians, we were going to good church, and we went every service. So you always had the Holy Spirit bringing up to your remembrance what you shouldn't be doing. And then we had to learn after the first couple of years, because I wanted her, she wanted me, we had to learn, no, let's make no provision to fulfill the lust of the flesh. We got to stay out the back seat of the car parked on Inspiration Lane because you get inspired. You got to stay out the basement late at night when the parents have gone to bed because you can get inspired. If you can't handle going out alone without touching each other, you need to go out in groups only, because otherwise you get inspired. And you're not ready to get married now, so you shouldn't be getting inspired. People start dating too soon. If you went out in a group date, that's fine. And then girls play this game. We talked about this with some of the single women before. Sometimes you just want a male friend. I don't want to date or nothing like that. But, you know, sometimes you want to go to a party or something. You want to take a man with you, or you want to go to a game and just get tired. And I say, why does that have to be a man? Why can't you go out with your girlfriend? Well, it's all platonic. It's all, don't lie. There's something going out with a man supply. You may not know it, but pastor knows. There's the possibility of sex. There's the whole allure of a man telling you're beautiful and meeting the need of a man who's a man you're supposed to be dating is meeting, but you know you're not going to date this man. He's just your friend. And to tell you the truth, that's the one you probably should marry. Your best friend of opposite sex is who you should marry. Everything else being equal in age groups and things, you really should. And we generally don't. Almost all of us got that one girlfriend. If you're a guy, you got that one girl. She's always been nice. You might have known her all your life. She's almost like a buddy to you, but you don't look at her that way. I just don't think of her like that. Everybody says, oh, she's sweet, she's nice. Yeah, I don't think of her like that. She's more like a sister to me. She ain't your sister. Ain't no blood. But the reason you've been with her all these years, because you two have things in common. You like her. She encourages you. You encourage her. When you're hurting, you pick up and call her. You see her, you're happy you saw her. But you go dating trying to find a beauty queen or prom queen somewhere. And you got that guy who's always been there for you to fall back on, but he's like a brother or a cousin. I don't think of him like that. You two would be married so happily because you already like each other. And all your friends who you have on a regular, intimate basis are people you get along with, because nobody has a friend they don't get along with. If you had a friend for like 20 years and you don't even have to call every day, but you still friends, it's because you got a lot in common. I got a friend like that, Gerard. He's a male friend. But we just went back to Detroit and with Gerard, we're friends. We may go 2 years, 3 years without talking, but when we get together, we're friends. We ain't reliving the old time, we just friends. We went over his house, I took my kids and my wife, he took his kids and wife, we over to his house in the backyard having a picnic like we do this every week. And we ain't seen each other in 2 or 3 years, because we're friends. There's some females I know, when you get married, you need to let some of that stuff chill though. Because you don't want to have no problems in your own relationship. But that doesn't mean if you saw that person, you still wouldn't be friends. There's girls, if I saw them, hey, how you doing? I'd be happy to see them. They're nice. We got along fine. We're still friends. But I'm married, so I don't maintain and be working that. I ain't trying to create no problems. But they're still friends. Now, you should marry your best friend of the opposite sex. But instead, we go looking for this weird stuff, but I want somebody to go have prettier babies. You know what? You can have pretty babies and you could take them to divorce court with you to fight over y'all's pretty babies. Who gonna get the pretty baby? Judge, I want the pretty babies. No, I want the pretty babies. Pretty babies don't mean nothing. And I guarantee you, if you're any kind of person at all, you're gonna love whoever you have. And they're gonna look good to you anyway. Because I've seen some women's babies that look like little trolls. Ain't he cute? Glory to God. Hallelujah. Thank God we grow and we change. His blessings are new every morning, and let's pray for tomorrow morning, because it's an ugly baby. When we had our little kids, when they were first born in the first few weeks, I was like, who had these things? But they all turned out fine after they dried out and started, you know, I was like, whoa, scary little kids. We put away all them little newborn pictures, look like mice, you know? But we got pretty babies now, we put that away. But people get married over a pretty baby. Now, some of this is in your mind. You're looking at somebody about what the baby's gonna look like. Do you know you ain't gonna like them nor the babies that much if everything's ugly in your household? That doesn't mean nothing. Well, I want a woman to shape just like this. There's nothing wrong wanting a woman fit and in shape, but don't be so picky that you're just outrageous that this woman here, really, I get along with her. She's acceptable, but she's not quite like that. I want to marry Tyra Banks. And if you marry somebody just as vain all her life, she's been a beauty queen. She's worked to be a beauty queen. Her parents made sure she had all the Vogue. The girl is as vain and selfish and as princified as nothing. She's going to make a terrible wife, a terrible friend, and a terrible helpmeet. But she look good on your arm, and you go marry her. You're going to have so many problems, you can't even imagine it. Most girls like that, I'm not talking about pretty girls, but I'm talking about ones who have been raised to be a princess, raised to be vain, have been taught that what you look like is more important than anything. You can't see me without my makeup. Oh, I got to fix my hair. Oh, I got to do this. People are real vain. They never just going to be regular. That's going to be some serious high maintenance in that relationship. And there's no man that want that much maintenance. I'm not saying go find a girl that's looking ugly as she can. Have somebody that's got some self-esteem, but you know who I'm talking about. You all know that girl who her mother groomed her to be prom queen, groomed her to be Miss Whatever, groomed to be everything, and told her that her whole self-worth is in how she looks. Generally, she may marry the chief jock. And you know, most of those sports people don't stay married. When the guy was Heisman Trophy winner, he was all this, they don't stay married. Most of them. I mean, if you could go track it, most male athletes with all that testosterone they have, who are the stars, they have been set up to where all the girls, they always think when you come with them, it's because you were the finest one they could find. And when you're no longer fine, or when you give them static, they say, look, plenty of girls want me. They drop you. And but you were the prime queen, so the prime queen is supposed to date the head quarterback. You're not supposed to date Poindexter with the pocket protector. You're supposed to date that. And those couples hardly ever stay married. They hardly ever stay married. And some of them end up in trailer parks. And nothing wrong with trailer park, but I'm talking about bad, low-down, run-down neighborhood trailer park because he hurt his knee and he didn't get the money. And she was counting on being Mrs. Trophy wife. And now he's got no money to afford a trophy, and then they fight, and they get divorced, or they just scrap out. All those things that we're taught to chase by television will not hold. Only love will last. We're going to talk about love tomorrow. We'll talk about the four different types of love. We'll talk about the only type of love you should marry on. We'll talk about how to identify whether you have that type of love or not, whether that person is capable of that type of love or not. Everybody is not capable of loving another person. The Bible says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. And that's a big problem because too many people don't love themselves, but they still get married. They can't love you. And you better find out because you want to be loved. You better find out if the person you're dating is capable of love. Some people are only capable of loving themselves. And even though the Bible commands them to love other people as you love yourself, they're only capable of loving themselves. And they will show you that if you got your eyes open looking for it. I love you so much I want to get in your pants. I don't care that we saved. He loves him. She's wearing clothes that entice and tempt you. She loves her. She loves the attention. I just want you to tell me I'm pretty. I mean, like I said, I date these girls. And if you date these girls as loose and wild like that, I think I dated one or two. And I was like, one date, that's over with. When I saw what you were wearing, we went on out. But I'm like, I ain't trying to get no fight over you every time we go out. You know, you dressing like you like guys got to come talk to you. Then I got to step in it and, you know, got to straighten stuff out. Girl like that, I'd drop her first date because it's dangerous. It's dangerous. Why you want her? She got insecurity issues. She's got to get all the attention and she's got to get it with the only thing she thinks she has value is her figure. So she's got to make sure she gets her attention by the only asset she thinks she's got. If that's the only asset a woman's got, you don't want her. And man, when you date these women and you check them out, you need to see if they can bring something to the table. You don't need a princess. You don't even want a princess. You want a business-minded woman. You want somebody who can bring something to the table. I don't want somebody looking for somebody to take care of them. I want somebody looking to work together to get more for both of us in life. Because if he's ambitious and he's going forward and she's skilled and able to help him, and a strong woman with strong personality and strong fortitude, oh, that couple can shake the world. They can shake the world. If Mrs. Cook wasn't as strong as she is, I couldn't do what I do. The Bible says a man would be well spoken of because of his good wife. Now, she's had to do like many other women. Sometimes they overlook the woman and they speak well of the man. But Proverbs said in Proverbs 31, chapter 2, women, that she is blessed and her husband is well spoken of in the gates of the city because of her. I know that she's a blessing to me. I may not always show it, may not always act like it to the understanding she wants, but I know she's blessed to me, and I know that things would be different if I had a different type of wife. If I had a wife that was always her, she, and where you going? Don't go nowhere. Where you going? If I had that kind of thing, it would nag me so much I wouldn't be free to come minister to other people. And as a pastor, you spend a lot of time with other people. Do you know people not married to a minister don't have to get a minister up on their husband up on Friday night to go to help other people? Or random calls in the middle of the night, you could be making love and the phone rang and somebody got a crisis. You got to say, I got to get with you later. I got to go to the hospital. Somebody's facing death. It takes a strong woman to put with that kind of stuff. It takes a strong woman to do that. And somebody dying, that would kill the mood anyway, so it ain't like you can just finish. You know that'd kill the mood, don't you? So-and-so dying, but I got to finish this. This thing is over. It's finished. Then kill the mood. Phone's ringing to mess you up, you know, if you answer them. It's bad news. But she has to share her husband with the whole congregation of people. It takes a strong woman to do that. Not every woman can do that. And I have to go because I'm called by God. There's a book out there. I think we got a few out there. Yeah, they're out there by Aretha Hagen called The Price Is Not Greater Than God's Grace. And she tells a story about what it's like being married to a minister. It's hard. It's tough. You know, we have not had a vacation in 12 years that went cross to Sunday up until this year. Because I didn't have associate pastor and I have to be here for the people. I can't just close church. So anything we can't do between Sunday and Sunday, I can't go. Here we had a guest minister come in and cover, so we were able to go. But, you know, 12 years of marriage and not having a 2-week vacation, or 3-week vacation where I'd run in town, run back out or whatever. Know where you're going, man. Woman, know where he's going. Make sure it's where you want to go. Make sure he's on his way there. We're going to talk about that in detail. Today, I'm just throwing out some things. I'm shooting it. Tomorrow, we're going to go to 1, 2, 3, 4, the different steps, the different points, so that we can put it. So you may not even have a lot of notes, but I hope you were listening, that you're getting some groundwork. So tomorrow, when we start laying the bricks on the house and get the house built before we leave tomorrow, you see that, hey, here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 I need to go work on. I had to cut it short. I had an endless amount of notes, but I stopped at 15 pages. And we'll go and pick up some of those things about being a clone of yourself and talking about how to love people and how to recognize love in people. What love is, so you can find out whether you're a lover or you just been out there counterfeiting with infatuation all that time, which most of us have been. A man's preparation, what a man should be doing. The different type of compatibilities, your spiritual compatibility, your emotional compatibility, physical compatibility. We'll talk about all those different things. And still, we will not even touch 1% of all we could talk about. But we're going to get those things in. And I'm still believing God. I'm still studying. I'm talking to you now. If there's any questions that you put up here when we dismiss, I'm going to make sure I get those in there. And I'll just bring some information specific in those areas. So we're going to go ahead and get ready to close. You can turn off the tape. And you can take a moment if you do have any questions.